This is Stephen Curry from the Golden State Warriors, number 30. You listen to Drive Time Sports on KOAL 750 AM.
Big night in the NBA last night. LeBron James and Luka Doncic duo tossed from the NBA playoffs in five games, and it was actually fairly lopsided. When you go back and you take a look at the series as a whole, that's the big story today. That's what people are talking about. We're going to talk about it as well as we do each week with our NBA analyst. We have James Holas on the mic right now. James, great to get you back on today. Thank you.
I wish I had your charisma, and I wish I had like your great radio voice, because I would, and I wish I had the time and I wasn't so lazy, because I would definitely try to come on, be your partner, and we'll start our own podcast, because I kind of called this. I kind of called this thing with the Lakers, and I kind of know basketball. So good to be on here so I can brag a little bit.
Yeah, I'd say you know basketball. It's one of the main reasons I love getting you on this show. Yeah, you did call this. James, we go back and we look at this series last night, not taking anything away from the Timberwolves, but typically in the playoffs, knowing that we get to talk about the team that won for the next couple of weeks. It seems to be a big focus on the teams that get bounced. And I don't know that you could find a more polarizing duo in the league than LeBron James and Luka. And what we saw over the last five games, while three of these four wins from Minnesota, the game was hanging in the balance going into the fourth quarter, you just got the vibe each time out. Athleticism was going to win over. And in my mind, that's exactly what happened in three out of Minnesota's four wins. Athleticism won over late in games.
Yeah, just physicality and athleticism, stamina, like it, all that stuff matters. You got one guy who takes like pristine care of his body in LeBron James, and he's always dedicated to his craft, but, you know, he's 40 years old, and that shows. I think that shows when you're almost 90 games into a season. You have another guy who's supremely skilled, an amazing scorer, can control the basketball game, but maybe he doesn't take care of the peripherals as much, and his body might not be in optimum NBA shape in Luka Doncic. And that kind of shows, because we saw another team that was very physically prepared, physically fit, and had the size to really just kind of box in Luka and LeBron. And over the course of those five games, you kind of watched them kind of wear down. The Timberwolves were just too physical. They were too disciplined on defense. Their offense wasn't anything really special, you know, but they just were able to be big, dominate the boards. And as we saw by that last game, the Lakers just kind of didn't want any more part of it. I'm not saying they folded. I'm not saying they quit. I think physically they just got bullied into the point where it was kind of like submission.
Before we talk about what they need to do to improve the roster and why this roster was not fit to win a championship this year to begin with, I do want to talk about J.J. Redick. And I believe you got to give J.J. full credit. The fact that he took over this team, they won 50 games. He had to maneuver them through a monumental trade, one of the biggest trades that we have seen in league history. They found a way to get the 3 seed. It was the first time since, oh my gosh, it's been like 10 years that the Lakers got to host game one of an NBA playoff series. It's been a really, really long time because of the bubble. I think there's plenty of positives from J.J. I believe he is the right guy for the job. But I also believe, James, that when you take a look at the pedigree, Duke does produce some of the most annoying people on and off the court. I believe that. and we saw that from J.J. I believe he was severely outcoached in this series, and I believe that there was a little bit of a pompous, arrogant attitude that, he was humbled. I'll put it that way.
He does come off. His face is very punchable. His demeanor and the way he speaks is almost a little supercilious. And I think he's a smart guy. I think, like you said, he's the right coach, but this is a rookie coach learning on the fly, and he has not just a rookie head coach, a rookie coach, period, right? Where, like, he doesn't have he never, like, you know, cut his teeth learning at the knee of a Pop or of a Coach Spo. He just was like, here, you're a coach. So conceptually, he did a lot of good things this season. Like, you nailed it. I think he has the right kind of maybe aggressive and kind of in-your-face attitude and spirit to coach someone like the Los Angeles Lakers. But as you said, man, he does come off, you know, a little snooty. I think he's a little over-emotional sometimes. Him kind of snipping at that reporter who asked him about leaning on his staff, you know, and he got kind of – he got, like, really kind of hurt about it, which is kind of weird. Because this is just, you know, this is part of the job, J.J. You have to answer tough questions. You made some questionable choices. You got to stand up and just answer those questions, so –
He's finding out, James, it's more fun to be on the other side of the microphone. He learned that this year.
Maybe he is. I think we're going to see probably this summer. He's going to, maybe, you know, hey, any good coach, he's going to watch the tape. He's probably going to get a little more media training and maybe learn some things and maybe try to maybe tone that down a little bit. But, yes, I'm with you. I think he is a good coach. But there's something about the crucible of coaching the Lakers, right? Everything's magnified. Everything's different. So, in general, I think he did a good job, just no context. But when you say the Lakers, I mean, let's be real. The clock's already ticking. We know how that works.
For sure. For sure. We will talk about the makeup of the roster. When they made the trade for Luka Doncic, and you basically said this, and I think it's 100% factual. We now know. We have the sample size. That it is a great move for the future of this organization. There was no question. You make that trade 10 out of 10 times. Was the roster worse for the 2024-25 season because of that trade? Yes. It is extreme. There is glaring holes within this organization. And the trade came at a time where you gave up your best assets, did not really have enough time to maneuver and get what you needed as far as the post is concerned. Best available option out there was Alex Len. He may, in fact, be the worst player in the NBA. Is this a better move for next season? No doubt. And I do believe it was always about the 2025-26 season, more so than the 24-25 season.
And more, not the 25-26, right? Luka's, what, 26 years old. So this move kind of lays the framework for the Lakers to have a superstar for the next decade. So absolutely, this was kind of playing with house money this season. However, my pushback to that, someone was talking about that last night, is that Anthony Davis was asking for a center to play with for the last 2 years, 3 years. So there should be a center on the roster already. Instead of just saying, no, AD, you're the center. You know, you have an oft-injured guy like Anthony Davis begging for someone to give him, expel him, and to take some of the tougher assignments, and they ignored him. But that center should have been on the roster. Another thing I think we've been saying for the last couple of years, they just don't have, they haven't been the Lakers, don't have enough shooting, just like real dead-eye, high-level shooting on the perimeter. Sure, they drafted Dalton Connect, and then they tried to trade him, and they kind of broke his confidence. It happens. And there was never enough athleticism on the wing. One thing I did notice is that LeBron can't blow by Julius Randle. Luka cannot blow by Naz Reid. Austin Reeves couldn't blow by anyone. There's no one who can just, using speed and athleticism, get into the rim and put a defense in rotation and get into the lane, put defense in rotation and kind of put rim pressure on to really make other defenses work. And they desperately need that, and Luka doesn't provide that. So that's been missing. So I'm going to say the front office has kind of been lacking for the last couple of years. And the Luka trade, the gift that keeps on giving, sure, it reset things and made us look a little different. But other than that, I don't think that Pelinka's done a very good job.
Again, James Hollis joining us right now as we talk NBA basketball. Crucial offseason, right? Pelinka gets an extension. To kind of piggyback off of that, the only reason he gets an extension is because he just landed a generational-type talent that you can build around, right, in the twilight of LeBron James' career. The idea of LeBron going anywhere, I think, is nonsense. I'm sure you would agree with that. He's got one more year left, in my estimation. It'll be with the Lakers next season, and we'll see what they can build around him.
100%. LeBron's going to be here for another year, maybe two, maybe three. Again, LeBron is all set to, you know, become a complementary player to a superstar. Luka might be that superstar, but there has to be some bridge pieces with them and around them. The same way you had Wade and LeBron in Miami, and then guess what? Their bridge player, the guy who kind of made it all work, the connective player, was Chris Bosh. I don't think Austin Reeves is that caliber of player. They need one more guy. If Rob Pelinka can finagle one more high-level borderline all-star / all-star level guy to really bolster that team and also get a big man who protects the rim, then they're cooking with gas in Los Angeles. But I don't know, man. The Lakers front office has not shown the proclivity to thread the various needles that need to be threaded this offseason. So this will be either a masterpiece or it's going to start crumbling.
James, let's move on and talk about the two games that we have tonight. We get the Knicks and the Pistons going into the series. I like Detroit to win this series. I thought that they would win based off athleticism. I thought there was something cooking, and the fact of the matter is they should be up 3-2 going into tonight's game. Yet, here they are at home, faced with elimination. How much deeper does this series go, or does New York close it out tonight?
I'm with you. I'm really, really pulling for the Pistons to somehow pull this off. That'd be amazing. Because I think talent-wise, they're right there with the Knicks. But here it does become about experience a little bit, right? And so the veteran Knicks have a clear advantage. We've seen Detroit kind of let go of the rope several times this series. Like you said, they should be up 3-2. Rockets have a similar problem. Just for the sake of what I want, my heart is saying I want this to go seven, Detroit to win. But I think the Knicks finally get a little serious, and especially if Brunson, I don't know his status for this game, but he kind of tweaked his ankle again. If he's 90% and ready to go and can be himself, I'm going to say the Knicks pull out a close one tonight. But my heart wants the Pistons to win it and wants the Pistons to win it in seven.
I think the more entertaining series will be in the nightcap, and that's Denver and the Clippers. This has been wildly entertaining. Right now, Denver up 3-2. This was a team a lot of people thought would be dead in the water. I did not see Denver coming out of this first-round series just based off of everything that has gone down within this organization. Not only are they winning this series, but we go back to Game 5. They were explosive against this Clipper team, putting up 131 points.
So the big thing that takeaway from this series is that Kawhi Leonard, the same way we say about LeBron all the time, how he looks the same, but we know he can't really impact the game the same. At a lesser rate, Kawhi Leonard still looks great in spurts, and he had that amazing game in this series. But otherwise, unless, I don't know if something's going on with him physically, can he just not do it anymore? But they need him to take over these games. He's just not doing it. I think he only took, what, 9 shots last game? That's unacceptable in a game that they have to win, or maybe 15 shots, him and James Harden. Another thing that's a takeaway, James Harden is James Harden. Was great a couple games, but once the intensity ratchets up, he starts checking out, and it's sad. That's who he is. And another thing is that, we always say that Joker and Jamal Murray's two-man game is almost unstoppable. Well, Jamal Murray might have dug deep and pulled back out Bubble Jamal because he looked incredible. If he gets it going, he raises the ceiling to the Nuggets from just a puncher's chance to being a viable contender. If he turns into playoff Jamal Murray playing with Joker, that kind of boosts the ceiling of the Denver Nuggets to a level that I didn't think they had this year.
If you're getting efficiency from Jamal Murray and you're getting efficiency from Russell Westbrook off of the bench, we know Joker is going to be Joker. We know Michael Porter is going to be Michael Porter. We know Aaron Gordon is going to be Aaron Gordon. They're not question marks. Question marks for me on this Nugget team is what Jamal Murray do you get and what does Westbrook look like leading the bench mob? If you're getting productivity and efficiency from Murray and Westbrook, this is a team that can win the Western Conference based off of how good Jokic really is. I think it's that simple with the Nuggets, James. I really do.
100%. And Westbrook, you're right. That'd be a real bonus if Westbrook can keep it going and be a positive. But I don't trust him at this stage in the career. I think more than anything, Jamal Murray kind of really unlocking himself is going to also unlock Christian Brown. Christian Brown looked great to start the season, but as the team started to sputter a little bit, he sputters because I believe he is one of those kind of, I call him connective tissue players, a lot like Al Horford, where he plays off of the superstars and they might not always show in the stats, but the more they open up the floor for him, he'll hit. He's not a great shooter, but standstill shooting, he made plenty early in the season because he had space. So you give him some space, he can hit threes. He'll corner crash and grab rebounds. He'll cut behind the defense and catch lobs and rebounds. So he is going to be the one that benefit the most. And if he gets his confidence up, we'll look out for the rest of the league because the Nuggets might have something cooking.
And then we got to talk about the other series. Could come to a close tomorrow, Golden State-Houston. I think you penned this perfectly before we hopped on the air. There's no excuse for Houston to not win this series based off of the time that Jimmy Butler missed, yet they're on the brink of elimination, and I do believe the Warriors will close this one out in six. Houston has no one to blame but themselves, but that is the young, inexperienced squad that we have talked about. It kind of relates this back to the Detroit Pistons, right? A team that just had a catastrophic meltdown in game one of that series. We are seeing the same thing with this Rockets squad. It's the idea of not being in this spot before, and that has affected this series greatly.
100%. And the only reason that Golden State is up right now is because of corporate knowledge and just kind of like, we've been here before. We know how the margins work because let's be real. We saw it last game. When the Rockets are playing free and playing the way they can, they maximize themselves. Golden State can't hang with those guys, right? It's almost a lot like the Lakers and the Timberwolves as far as the other team being Houston. They're just younger. They're faster. They're stronger. They're deeper. But we saw they started slowing down. You can see them getting their own heads, overthinking. And Draymond's antics got to them a little bit in the games that the Golden State has won. So let's see if Houston maybe unlocks something. They all click in the place and say, hey, we're kind of better than this team. Let's just be better than them. And if they can pull away and get a big enough lead. Because I am going to say, I'll go out on a limb. I'll be wrong if I'm wrong. Houston's going to come back and win this series.
Ooh, Ooh, you think they... Well, listen, if they get a win, if they find a way to win Game 6, I mean, obviously, I got the mindset, James. I know that they're the 2 seed. You're going up against Golden State. I've always had the mindset that if it goes to Game 7, game could be played on Mars. I'm going to take the team that has the best player in the series. And I still think that's Golden State. I think that you can make the argument they have the 2 best players in this series. I have a hard time seeing Houston recovering from this. That would be something, though. To bounce back from a 3-1 deficit against this Golden State team, that'd be something.
I would love it, and I'm pulling for it. My thing is, sure, if we're having a skills competition, yes, Jimmy Butler and Steph Curry 1 and 2, and Steph Curry is the best player in the series, full stop. I'm just saying when it comes to leveraging their athleticism and leveraging their speed and length, I think that Coach Ime, who has, you know, went head-to-head with Steve Kerr before, he can maybe actually put together a game plan where he's not playing Steph Curry in drop coverage and getting burned. I think that Amen Thompson is that special a defender. Last game he held Steph Curry to, what, 15 points, 14 points? And, you know, I think he had 5 steals, and a couple of them he just straight-up ripped Steph Curry. I think he is that special of a defender on the rise where this team can really just kind of dig in, and if they can focus for 40 of the 48 minutes and not make costly turnovers, I think they can kind of choke the life out of Golden State defensively.
Okay, we'll end with this. I want to go back over to Minnesota because we have not talked about the Timberwolves. We made the entire first half of this segment about the Lakers. I don't think that's entirely fair because Minnesota just physically beat them down for 5 games. Can Anthony Edwards get Minnesota over the hump and into the finals this season?
I think the Thunder, you know, after a little disappointment last year, the Thunder are on their own journey where they are deeper, they are better, they also have size, they have shooting, shooting and size, they have their own unicorn in Chet Holmgren, and I think Shea would be the best player in that series by far. Where I think out of 2 teams out of the West, it's going to be OKC or the Timberwolves. I just don't think the Timberwolves have enough offense, and I think that the Thunder will be able to generate enough offense as those two whenever they collide. So I'm going to say no. I'm going to say, yeah, Timberwolves, it's not their year. Not yet.
Thunder make Rudy Gobert virtually unplayable in a 7-game set, right?
They should, because not only can they match him with a guy like Hartenstein, just put Chet at center, and Rudy is now, you know, they can go 5 out, and Rudy is spinning around like a top trying to keep up with smaller guys. So that would be almost like the, you know, two teams with super different identities clashing, and it'd be like, you know, styles make fights. Who can dominate their style? I just think the Thunder right now were like a buzzsaw in the regular season. We even saw that last series. Like, they're going to be a load to handle for any team in the West.
James Olas, always kind enough to join us here on Drive Time Sports. James, before I let you go, we'll talk about where we can find more of you and your takes during the NBA playoffs.
Formerly known as Twitter, and where the sky is blue, where, you know, I'm loving it. I'm a Celtics fan, but I'm watching every series intently. We didn't even get a touch on Boston finally, you know, running Orlando out of the gym, but it wasn't worth talking about, right? It was a little warm-up. So yeah, at Snotty Drippin', homage to the great Scottie Pippen. Just come over and talk some basketball with me.
James, always a pleasure. Can't wait to do it again next week.
You're the man, brother.
Great to get James here on Drive Time Sports. We've got to pause for just a moment. We do have plenty more to get into when we return. We're going to flip talk horse racing. Yes, horse racing. Coming up this weekend, it is the Kentucky Derby. If you don't love the sport, you pay attention to the Triple Crown, right? We're going to go over the best betting odds. We're going to be joined by Steve Bortstein. That's coming up when we return live from the Sutherland Studios.